Hello, everybody. Welcome to Till's Roadhouse. We are in the bus with Dylan Carmichael,
man. What's up, brother? Thanks for having me, man. It's awesome.
Looking so forward to seeing you, man. We've got a chance to visit a few times over the years, but I'm looking forward to kind of catching up with what's going on in your world. You've had an exciting, you know, several months. I know you're out with Cody Johnson right now, man. You're out there killing it. Some awards are on the horizon. I think there's a lot of great stuff going on with you.
It's like every year, you know, like 2019, 2020, 2021, everybody goes, this is your year, this is your year. And I would say that this one feels more like it than the other ones for sure. Like all kinds of, just out of nowhere. Cody, John Party, Luke Bryan are all giving me a chance to go out on the road and make some fans. You know, heavily involved in country radio this year, doing some CRS New Faces show, which is kind of a rite of passage. Super awesome. Did you do New Faces?
So let's explain to everybody what CRS is. It's Country Radio Seminar. Happens usually every February, like the end of February. And it's like a multi-day convention where all of the radio programmers and the people from the radio industry come in. This is like their convention. So there's artist performances all over the place. We usually have it at a big hotel at one of the convention rooms, and it's multiple artists doing concerts and showcases for the labels and stuff. But the New Faces show is a very special thing. I was on part of the New Faces show back in 92 93.
Wow, man, that's awesome.
And I was on that New Faces show with Brooks and Dunn and Pam Tillis. Wow. There was a whole slew of artists that were on there, and I mean, and everybody but one of us had a thriving career in the 90s. It was pretty amazing.
They've got a great track record, and you know, anybody that's anybody has.
I actually went to the show last year, and Jelly Roll was on it, Priscilla Block, Frank Ray, Jackson Dean.
Yep.
So that was a pretty star-stellar lineup, and everybody's having some radio success and doing well out there. Do you know who the rest of your class is?
Yeah, it's George Burge, Megan Maroney's on there, Connor Smith, and Corey Kent.
Like all those. That's a pretty stout class right there.
Yeah, and they've
cut the size of the class down, too. I mean, used to be a lengthy event. Y'all are actually getting to do like a small set. Back when we did it, we just did a couple songs. So it was a complete different thing because there were so many of us involved in it back then. But radio had a larger format back then. I mean,
we had
a bigger airplay list. I mean, I think airplay list is down to about 18 current songs. Back then, we were playing like 25 currents, and you still had the blow off and gold catalog and stuff. But there's a lot. It's just a fun thing to be part of.
It really is
a rite of passage.
I grew up on country radio, and I absolutely respect it. I love it. I want to be involved in it long term. But not to change the subject, but I thought about this a little bit ago. We were in Gonzales, Louisiana.
Yeah.
And I came up here, and I sat down here, and you were sitting there, actually. It's so funny. I feel like it was all a blur, but there was people everywhere, like, you know, all your friends and stuff. And I got to say, like, two words to you that night, and I headed out. And what I said was, hey, Tracy. And you looked at me. I said, man, I appreciate the shit out of you. And what I meant by that was, first off, you invited me to come and open for you, which was awesome. But I later thought, I don't know if he knows what I mean by that, but it was that, and it was also everything you've done in country music, you know, the fact you're still working, doing this out there and, you know, working with new artists and giving them a chance. It's awesome, dude. Like, I look up to you so much. That's what I meant by that. So,
thank you. I genuinely still love this business, and I've enjoyed getting to know a lot of the younger artists and kind of seeing, you know, it's good to see that smile and that energy and knowing that country music has actually got some really good traditional artists that are continuing to appreciate the history and the culture of what our format's done. And I'm glad to see
it's
that
awesome,
it's healthy right now, and it's very diverse, which is very cool.
Yes, it is. It is. And, but yeah, it's, I never knew. Like, you know, because when you talk to people about, oh, man, I want to move to Nashville and pursue music, it's always got a little bit of a negative thing going, like, oh, man, watch out for those sharks down there, or it's don't forget where you come from. And I'm like, oh, am I Is that, am I at risk of forgetting where I came from? Which I get what they're saying, and there is a risk of that when you do this. But overall, man, it's been so rewarding being in this business all the way from the very beginning. I mean, I wrote a song recently, a couple lines in it. We were paper plate poor, knocking on Nashville's doors, getting told no and turned away. Even those moments, looking back on it, I'm like, man, what a crazy life and crazy story.
And you know, really and truly, to have success in this business, it's a very small, teeny tiny percentage of people in the big scheme of things. Yeah. And if you just put it in the category of people that aspire to do this, that are very, very talented, go down on Lower Broad on the weekend and listen to how good the musicians are and the vocalists and just people with incredible talent. And just a very small percentage of them will even get a shot to get their foot in the door to have a chance. And you know, there's so many things that can go wrong. It's just you better grab a hold of it and hang on.
That's right.
Because when it hits, you better be ready to capitalize on the opportunity.
Yep.
For sure, man.
Yep.
You've seen a lot of things change. I know. How did you land the Cody Johnson deal?
It's crazy. I'd never actually even met Cody before. And everybody says, oh, well, you know, go out there and make some friends and, you know, maybe they'll take you on tour and be good, you know, just be good to people and work hard and maybe they'll take a liking to you and you'll end up on their tour. So that's, you know, I've just been out there trying to be social and make some friends. But it's so funny because the first time I was ever asked to be on a big tour like that was a guy I'd never even met.
Yeah.
So the story and I wasn't there, so I'm just going to tell like my understanding of what I heard happened was that Cody was on tour with Luke Combs and they were in Australia. And through a friend of a friend, I met Cody's tour manager, Troy, one of his tour managers, his assistant tour manager. And I know his brother, Ethan. And Cody was and him were playing darts in Australia. And I guess Cody was playing one of my songs or something. And Troy said, you know Dylan's music? And he's like, yeah, I like it, or I like this song, or whatever. And Troy's like, "Man, I know him. My brother knows him. He's a cool guy. Like we've been turkey hunting and stuff." And Cody just says something like, "Man, maybe I ought to look into bringing him out on some dates now that I know, you know, he's a decent dude." Because Cody likes his everybody to be, but you know, a little like responsible, good, honest people that ain't gonna be pulling no crazy stuff back there, you know. And so it's been awesome, and I got to meet him the first date, and exactly what I expected. You know,
I haven't had a chance to meet him yet either, but I hear great things about him.
He's a stand-up guy, you know.
He sticks to his convictions, too. He don't care. He'll tell you off on stage pretty quick.
it's awesome, because I grew up around people like that.
You know? I don't know if a lot of people know, but you actually have some country music lineage in your in your background. I know that John Michael and Eddie are your uncles, right?
That's right. Yeah, Eddie Montgomery of Montgomery Gentry, for those watching and listening. My mom is their sister, Becky, and she's a singer as well. I grew up around it since the time I was a kid. I remember singing.
When did you start dreaming about that? Was that part of what really, did you see all of it when you were growing up and really started thinking at what age, I want to do this?
It was it was exciting to be around from the time I was a little kid. I just enjoy having a good time. I mean, I love singing, I love writing songs, but from the time I was a kid, I enjoyed going and seeing my mother's concerts and my uncle's concerts and seeing them get on stage and flip the switch on and act like, you know, perform. And it just excited me from the time I was a little kid. It still excites me so much. And I'm like a little kid when I'm about to go on stage.
And hold on to that as long as you can, man. I mean, there does come a burnout point as you get older. You get kind of burned. And you've seen that with your uncles too. But John Michael and I were label mates for years.
Yep.
And Eddie and I became friends when Ellie was selling merch for John Michael.
Wow.
I mean, he'd been out here a long time before Montgomery Gentry was even heard of, man.
Yep.
But we've been friends a long time. I think a lot of both of them, man.
They're great dudes. Yeah. They really are. And That all started with my grandmother and grandfather, which is their mother and father, had a band in the 70s. They were in a country band around Kentucky, and they played all the honky tonks and stuff when my mother, John, and Eddie were growing up. And my grandma played drums in the band.
Wow.
Because my grandpa was having a hard time keeping a drummer. And she goes, well, I'll just learn. And sure enough, they called her Snooky Dean. She got back there and tapped away, and she finally got them figured out. And she played drums, drove their drunk asses around from show to show.
Well, we all need that person. Right. It's usually not the drummer, though.
Right.
I don't know. Is there anybody over there that can drive after a show? Not in our bus. I don't think so. Yeah.
Hopefully the driver.
Well, yeah. We kind of count on that. Yeah. They don't need to come to the shows. Yeah, we tend to hang our toes off the edge of stage a little bit, just like I'm sure you do.
Yeah, man, it's awesome, dude. It's just as awesome as I ever dreamed.
What's been the highlight for you so far? I mean, is it a place you played? Is it a contact with a fan? What sticks in your mind is one of the iconic moments? Is it a reaction from a crowd at a show last year?
Yeah, I mean, man, the first time I ever played the Grand Ole Opry, it don't get much better than that. Yeah. San Antonio a couple years ago with Brooks and Dunn at the then AT&T Stadium. I mean, it's like 40-something thousand people.
Yeah.
And I remember in that moment, the best way I can explain it is when 40,000 people are looking at you and screaming at you all at the same time, I mean, it rattles all the way down to your soul. And I don't know how to explain it other than that, but man, it's moving. I mean, it will, you feel like you're floating. It's just like, whoa. It's hard to even remember your lyrics. A couple times they were so loud. Yeah. I'm like, with ears on, I mean, I'm like, golly, it's crazy. So
you know,
that stands out.
When we went through COVID, I haven't taken time off in over 30 years. And when COVID shut us down, that was probably the hardest thing for me because I'd never really stopped. I take a break at the holidays here and there, but that's almost like an addiction. You get used to getting your ego charged up a little bit and, you know, going out there does something to you. And when it goes away for a lengthy period of time, it's like I went through some depression. It was really tough.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I was willing to go out there and do it anyway. I was itching so bad.
Oh, just clawing at, chomping at the bit, trying to get, just don't cancel dates again.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm ready to go. I can't take this anymore. And then after I finally, I guess it's kind of like, you know, if you get incarcerated and you fight it and fight it and fight it and fight it, and when you finally accept it, then it's weird when you get back out.
Yeah.
I've never been incarcerated. Being living on a bus is almost like a form of incarceration, though, except you can drink.
I don't know. I feel like they might be drinking up in prison.
You think they get hold of it?
Yeah,
but they make that in toilets, man.
Yeah, I don't want nothing out of a toilet.
Oh, my gosh. I haven't had a chance to work with Brooks and Dunn yet, but, you know, I've loved – Ronnie's one of my favorite country singers, man. I don't think anybody better. He still kills it, too.
Yeah. I can't believe that. That actually surprises me.
Never done shows with him. I mean, I'm sure at some point we were probably on a package show at a big festival or something, but I don't really remember. We've never gone out and toured together.
Yeah.
That's got to be pretty cool.
Yeah. It was awesome. They were super, super nice to us. They took good care of us. Kix came and said hi to us pretty much every day. Just made sure he made his rounds. He's kind of a social butterfly, and it was awesome. Those guys are great.
So what are your outlets when you're not on the road? You got to have that balance, man. I know you pulled up and saw my pond out here. He's like, my fishing pole with me.
I do. As soon as it starts warming up, it's bass fishing, which is my number one in the whole world.
What kind of bass boat you running?
You know what? I ain't got a bass boat.
You need to talk to somebody. I got a contact over at Ranger that would probably set you up with a boat.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, and in the meantime, until that happens, I put my big ass on a kayak, believe it or not.
That's fun, too. I mean,
yeah,
I like to fish out
is.
On a kayak. We like to go to some of the rivers. We got a whole slew of kayaks, and we'll float all day.
Oh, man.
There's nothing.
It's peaceful.
It's
it
awesome.
Really is.
He's a smallmouth assassin.
I almost patched one of my kayaks up yesterday, but I was studying this here new board.
You patched it up?
Well, I need to because I've had it since, God, how many years ago was that?
Oh, man.
And it's been through hell. So it finally tore through the keel. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
And there's just this little pinhole. And then last time I went kayaking, I didn't realize that. I was like, man, something's a little different here. My cooler can't be leaking this much water. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm taking on water. I'm about to lose $300 worth of tackle here. What's going on? So, yeah, thank God I was in an area where it was about waist deep.
Yeah.
But as soon as I realized it was almost too late, that's when,
So it went down on
But I didn't lose any of it. I got out quick enough to hold the, you know, the top of it.
We need to talk about this because I have to do that to mine. I'm curious how you're going
to
do it.
They've got little fiberglass kits that you can do that will patch those holes and stuff.
Really?
Have you seen some of these crazy guys that go out and fish in a kayak in the ocean?
That's
crazy. I mean, like catch, hook on to something 200 pounds and get drug all. I'd die. Could you imagine hooking on to something that big and you're just out there getting drug all over the place? Holy crap.
There's people in them stand-up paddle boards, too, so they're not even sitting down. What are they going to do with it once they get it up to the board?
I took some PVC pipe and mounted it to the backsides with
air. Like a stabilizer?
They're outriggers.
Yeah.
And then I took a aluminum rod off the side and mounted a trolling motor to it. So I'm over there in luxury. I've got a little steering
gyvering up stuff, ain't you?
I got a trolling motor, and I'll go like 5 miles an hour all the way to my fishing spot. And people are honking at me and laughing at me.
You an Old Hickory or a Percy Priest guy?
Old Hickory.
Yeah, that's where
I like Percy too, but I live on Old Hickory.
You know, I've never had much luck. Now, Percy has some good stripers and a lot of crappie beds, and I like crappie fishing.
Oh, crappie's the best eating in the world, man.
Tis the season, baby.
That's right. I know. I mean, I went yesterday.
Yeah.
Itching.
Getting that time of you deer hunt at all?
I do, yeah. Come fall, I start shooting my bow about, maybe like August or something. Start getting those muscles worked up.
Oh, yeah.
And then season comes in. I hunt out in West Tennessee, and I love it. It's my second favorite thing to do. And I eat venison all winter.
Absolutely.
I love it. I eat it up, man. I can't. But yeah, those are my two outlets. And it sounds like the biggest. Sometimes I hate saying that when people ask because it sounds like the biggest country singer cliche ever. Hunting and fishing.
Yeah, but you
but
know.
But it's really like such a part of my heart and soul.
But you know, really and truly, for most of us that grew up in small towns and country, that's a peaceful solitude time where you get to think, ponder on things.
Oh, yeah.
I like getting on a tractor and riding around by myself, too.
Spend
hours out there bush hogging the fields. Anything like that where when you're out here on the road, you're so inundated with stuff. You got to be on all the time. There's always somebody needing something or meet and greets or radio stations to visit, all the things that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
That when you turn it off, man, you got to have that outlet and the peace and quiet's healthy.
I'm needing it more and more every year. I need a little bit more of that time. And I get it.
Are you learning how to balance your schedule and when to block times way ahead so you don't just get run to death?
A little bit better, yeah. But I'm just in a mode right now of just nose to the ground.
Get it all.
I mean, take it all. And no sleep. And honestly, I'm not healthy. Like, I don't sleep ever, you know. It's hard to eat healthy on the road. And so I got to figure that out. But it's tough. You have to sacrifice your health a little bit at this level, you know.
Yeah, it's stressful. But, it took me a long time to do it, too, because I'm a grinder, man. I'd stay out there forever and just work all the time. But I've had to kind of realize in the last few years that looking down through the schedule and saying, okay, I'm going to take this week off, and I'm going to take this week off, and I'm going to take this week off, and these are non-negotiable.
Yeah.
And it never fails. You block those dates, and then somebody's going to send you some stupid money offer. That you just can't say no to, and then you turn it down two or three times, and they keep raising it up. And then it's like, well, damn it.
I know it happens every time. I swear it does.
So New Faces show. I mean, and I don't know when this is going to air, but your New Faces tonight, right? Yeah,
you perform.
This is just the beginning of CRS. Your faces is just tomorrow, the next day.
I think it's like the first, whatever day that is. Like I think Friday or something. Yeah. I think it's Friday.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, man. You're going to have a good time, man.
I'm stoked. It's going to be crazy. I need to go get me one of those IVs. Cody Johnson does that once a week. He gets those IV things.
Oh, yeah.
It's a game changer.
Well, it makes a big difference.
Everybody on the tour was not feeling well, colds or whatever, and I got it. I got whatever cold it was, and I was just like run down and just trying to get through the show. And And Cody was he was like, I heard you're sick or not feeling well. I'm gonna gift you something. And so he had paid to have somebody come out and hook me up. And man, I kid you not, an hour later I was a different person.
It just hydrates you up. Yep. They got all kinds of little tricks they can stick in there too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But
we try to go to the gym a lot on the road, man. It makes a difference, kind of sweat those toxins out and stuff. Yeah. But it's just so hard to balance it all when there's so many people demanding your time, man.
Yep.
You'll figure it all out.
Those hotel gyms, man, I've got fallen off the wagon on that. I did so good for the whole year of 23, and then just this year so far, I did a backwards resolution. I quit going to the gym.
It's easy to do, and one I miss 1 or 2 weeks, and then it turns into a month, and then it turns into two, and it's like, crap.
I know.
There you go.
My wife even bought me some new tennis shoes. She's like, because she knows if I get new tennis shoes for whatever reason, I start going to the gym. It didn't work this time.
So let's talk about some music, man.
Yeah.
You got a new project coming out soon?
Yeah, I don't have a release date yet.
Are you finished with it? All recording?
We're going in, and I think next week.
Awesome.
Yeah, and so we'll cut 7 or 8 songs, and I've got 7 finished so far, so we're pretty much
cool
wrapping her up. But it'll come out this year, probably the end of this year. But we're going to be releasing music that whole time. You know,
what's kind of the flavor of it?
Man, you know, it's Southern rock influence, a lot of the stuff, and traditional country. You know, I came up with a lot of Skinner, a lot of Charlie Daniels Band and stuff, and I truly love that. I love blues. I'm a big blues guy. And then traditional country, you know, Haggard and, Willie and
all those
love Waylon and you know, I loved Jamie Johnson when Jamie came out.
Huge,
and,
man.
Of course, been a fan of your music for such a long time, so I get that traditional country heavily as well. But in today's time, production's different, and so it's got that great modern technology flavor as well. It sounds big, and it's going to be up front, so everybody can hear the vocal real nice.
That's what they want, man.
Yeah,
shove that vocal up. So I saw that John Party had produced a couple of sides. Who all is doing your production stuff?
Yeah, so John Party, Ryan Gore did the first 7 on this, and then Jared Conrad is doing the next 6 or 7 or 8. And then me and John may go back in and do a couple more. So it's just
What's John's production style like?
You know,
see a cheerleader? Is he out there structuring tracks?
He is. He will not let things steer. Him and I have, like, he understands what I'm going for, and the things where I draw the line. You know what I mean? Like, I ain't doing that. Like, that guitar sounds silly. Like, that sounds way too. I'm not a pop guy. I have no problem with pop. Like, I respect it. I think it's awesome. Obviously, the biggest genre in the whole world, whatever. I don't listen to pop. Never did listen to pop. And pop is obviously in. Not saying anything bad about it. But, you know, sometimes those session musicians are doing so many of those kind of pop things going on, and they sometimes go straight to that. And John knows that I'm not feeling that. And he just snips it in the bud immediately, which is great. And he also breaks up the monotony of the studio. And he gets everybody. It's from the moment he walks in the door, it's a totally unpredictable experience from the moment he walks in to the moment we leave. And so it's just like it creates a great atmosphere to be creative.
That's awesome. Who's some of the session players that you use?
That's a good question. Lonnie Wilson on drums.
Love Lonnie.
Saul is a new is well, he's not really new anymore. I guess
I'm not familiar with him.
Yeah, what's his last name? I always mess up his Saul, last name.
Saul.
Saul.
He's awesome.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, there's so many new players
Wilcox.
In town.
Yes, thank you.
No, Phil Cox. Yeah.
And, man,
how do you not remember
Sanders,
that name?
Pedal Steel. Yeah. That's
right. What do you do?
Man, he's got a – Saul's got a great story. Brent Mason moved him to town from from Europe, somewhere in Europe, and he's got a strong accent. But
is he a left-handed guitar player?
No, he's a righty.
Okay.
But he comes in, and he's like an evil scientist with his sounds and his pedal boards and stuff. Wow. And he lays it all out there, and you're just kind of scratching your head going, what is all that? And you don't, if you don't know him and you've never heard him, you don't know what's about to happen. And then he will just blow your mind. Wow. It's like, it's crazy. And so, yeah, we love working with him. I said a minute ago, Scotty Sanders on pedal steel on the last stuff we did, to name a few, but yeah.
I remember the first time I walked in the studio, just the caliber of players that you get exposed to, that you get to work with here in the town.
It's amazing.
Mean, being in a session with guys that are really at the top of their game,
yep.
There's just so much energy in the room, especially when they all got great attitudes, man.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody's communicating. There's things that happen that if you're just playing to a click and piecemealing stuff out and having everybody put their parts in, there's so much stuff that gets lost.
Yep.
That having those brains in there trying to make little accents and little nuances and gang licks and double licks and it's magic, isn't it? And you can tell when something magical happens too.
I had no idea what to expect when I first moved to town. I'd never recorded before, and seeing that and discovering that was. It's so much fun. I look so forward to it. And the day that they quit doing live full band recording, you know, when they're all together,
I'm done.
I'm out. I ain't playing with that. You know what I mean? And so the talent is crazy. It's like if you could take something, they won't go on the road, most of them, but if you could put a band together out of that group.
It'd be awful expensive.
Yeah, it'd be awful expensive. Yeah. And Lonnie plays with, or I guess he still plays with George Strait some on the road, but.
Yeah, well, I remember hearing years ago, back in the 90s, when Paul Franklin was hot as a firecracker on steel and pedal steel, Dire Strait hired him to go on tour with him. And I heard that they paid him $1 million back in the mid-90s.
Wow.
And they probably weren't doing 30 shows.
And I'm surprised, do they have any songs with pedal steel?
Oh, there's a lot of pedal steel. Dire Strait had a lot of pedal steel.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
So, I mean, those guys, man, they're at a whole nother level, man. You know what always fascinates me, too? And I was watching a thing on Tom Bukovac. I've told this story a few times. And he was on with Rick Beato. You ever watch him on
he's I know Bukovac.
Yeah. But anyway, they were talking about what the most difficult thing about being a session player was. And he said the most difficult thing is, he said, you don't realize it, but say you're in a tracking session. If you laid your groove down and everything, you're going back to do your solo. And you get your sounds and everything right, you know exactly what you're going to do, and you feel like you just freaking smoked it. And the producer says, not really digging that direction. Can you try this over here? And you got to wipe that clean.
Yeah.
You got to leave that over here. Don't get your feelings hurt about it. You got to come up with something completely different and attack it with just as much passion and precision as what you did, and maybe even two or three times.
Yeah.
And be able to keep that demeanor and not take it personal. And that's got to be really difficult to do. That's a whole mindset.
That's
man.
An interesting way to put it. I hadn't thought about it that way. But and I'm a lot of times the guy that's back there saying that.
Oh, yeah.
I work with, in my mind, I communicate through drums for some reason. When I first started off, I loved playing drums, and I was never good at it. But when I'll be in the studio, and instead of vocalizing like a guitar part or something, I'll be like, do like a double boo ga double, and then the bass comes in and goes boo doo doo boo 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 ga. And that's just how I communicate. So Lonnie is awesome. I love working with Lonnie because I can be like straight up.
He speaks drum.
Yeah. Yeah. He speaks drum. Kind of. And then I'm like, hey, can we do like some more Tom stuff right there? And he's like, yeah, what are you thinking? And I'm like, I don't know the numbers. I'm not like, oh, yeah, that's a 6/7. You know, I'm just like, boo, 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 boo. He's cracking up at me. He's cool. He gets what I'm trying to say, and he nails it every time.
Oh, he's been around a long time. He's played on a bunch of hit records, man. Just to name one was Time Marches On.
Oh, really?
Oh, played on that record.
Yeah, I didn't know that. So, yeah. Wow, man.
Him and Joe Diffie were real tight, my old friend.
That's right.
Joe and him worked together a lot, wrote a lot of songs together, cut a lot of sessions together, man.
Gosh, I got to meet Joe a couple years before he passed, and yeah. I ended up naming one of my dogs after him. But
well, he'd be proud.
Yeah. And me and Lonnie talked about Joe, and I didn't realize until this session recently that how close they were.
They were very close.
Really yeah. close, man.
So songwriting stuff, who's some of the guys you've been writing with, man? How has that changed for you since you first came to town? Because once you start having success, man, the door opens up to a lot of the A-level writers that you didn't have access to out of the box.
That's so true. And my first question is always, why? Why do they want to ride with me? You know,
because they want to hit. Yeah.
Why? Why?
They love your voice.
Why am I in a place where I have a potential to ever have a hit? I'm just so dumbfounded by all of this. It's honestly crazy. But I just went to Key West this weekend and spent 3 days with Dean Dillon, and I'm just like, What is happening? Casey Bethard's one of my favorites. Yeah. Casey and Phil O'Donnell, us three get together and do some awesome stuff.
I know she wrote with, was it David Lee Murphy?
David Lee Murphy's on there. Yeah. Yep, I love writing with David Lee. Yeah. Man, who else? Randy Montana, his dad's Billy Montana. And those guys are incredible songwriters. Dan and Reed Isbell, been writing with them a lot lately. Yeah. They're awesome. I've really came into my own little clique, people that understand what I'm trying to do, but will challenge me at the same time, you know, in a sense of pushing me to experiment, but they know when I'm like, I don't know, that's not me. They'll be like, okay, no problem, you know. But
do you everybody's got a different approach. I mean, I've kind of evolved to the place that I'm a course first writer kind of guy. I write the meat of the middle of the song and then back up. And I'm not a great melody writer, so I always have to have some of those good guitar players that can make all those fancy chords that I can't make.
Right. I'm the same, actually. Yeah. I'm very similar. I like to, I'm a, I guess, a concept guy. You know, I will lay in bed and dream up these concepts, and I'll try to find the best title to smack on it, and sometimes in the room that my writing buddies will alter the title a little bit to make it connect better, but I'm not a melody guy. My melodies are super dated, which is good, but they usually take my melody and throw it in a blender and do their thing, and then they'll pitch it, spit it back out, you know, and it's always better than mine. But yeah, it's and then I love starting at the chorus, because it's like you want, like you said, you want to get that meat of what you're trying to say and first, or at least I do, and then, you know, verses, try to tell a story or sometimes paint a picture in some way. Verse two's always got to beat verse one with verse two.
Opening lines are really important, you know.
Opening line and verse two is those ones that I get hung up on a lot and end up spending the most time on.
I have found too that and everybody's got a different mental process, but if I can visualize the scene in my mind, the lyrics just fall out. If I'm having trouble seeing it in my mind's eye, I can flog that thing for hours and just feel like I'm beating a dead horse, man. You're talking about seeing it in your mind when you sleep at night. I mean, does that resonate with you?
Some people have even said, like, if I can picture the music video for the song, which is interesting. Sometimes it's just not working, you know, and I don't know why. And I'm with great songwriters, and I love them to death. They're buddies or whatever. And some days it just ain't working.
Yeah, I know.
And we fight and fight and fight, and we end up with a verse and a chorus, and we leave, and it never gets finished. And I've never figured out why that happens sometimes. But sometimes it just flows. I mean, with Dean this weekend, we wrote six songs in 2 days.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, and it was just flowing. It was awesome. And then
Dean's melodies are amazing.
Yes.
You know, have you seen the documentary of him called Tennessee Whiskey?
Yes.
Just, I mean, I didn't realize the depth of, you know, his background and all that. So that was a very fascinating documentary.
It was.
But just his mindset of trying to understand, you know, just the pop melodies and how he really brought a lot of that into country. And that's what attracted me to George Strait in the early 80s when all that stuff came out, was a completely different melodic structure than anybody else was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's getting harder and harder to find things that are unique. I mean, we played all the chords. We've sung all the notes. I mean, it's so hard to find something that's unique and different.
Well, and he had the problem. He admitted that he had the same problem in the 70s where – he's like, man, if I could have just been doing this in the 50s. He's like, in the 50s, so much was invented. And he's like, man, if I really could have capitalized on that. But he said that he heard, if I'm not mistaken, it's James Taylor.
James Taylor was a big influence on him. Yes,
he said he heard James Taylor live when he was a young man. And he instantly thought, man, if I could write country lyrics and apply my country lifestyle into that kind of those kind of melodies and that songwriting style, he's like, that could really, you know, turn into something. And then that essentially was happened to be what George Strait loved.
And
it's his stories are incredible. He went on a and I'll say this because he's very open about this, but back in the 70s and 80s he was at Nashville Palace in Nashville, and Jeannie Seeley walked up to him and said, you're that new kid in town that everybody's talking about. And he's like, I reckon. I don't. And he's like, well, I hear you write really great songs, and I got somebody I want you to meet. And back then, so different, but she's like, hop in the car with me. And he said he's riding in the car with Jeannie Seeley, and he's just like, this is weird. And they show up to this house and goes in, and Hank Cochran's sitting there with a Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Yeah.
And Dean says that he said, I hear you're a pretty good songwriter. Won't you play me a few songs? And Dean plays him a few songs, and he goes, what are you doing? What are you doing tomorrow? And he goes, well, I don't reckon I'm doing anything. He goes, you want to fly to the Bahamas? And Hank takes him to the Bahamas, and they end up on a boat. And he said that, they drank whiskey and did other things for 4 days straight and wrote Miami, Miami, Oceanfront Property,
the chair,
like what? There's no way, like that's crazy.
And so I got to spend some time with Hank Cochran years ago and was good friends with him until the day he died. And I remember going up to his cabin in the mountains, and Hank was a different cat. So you'd wrestle a song down, you'd start getting your chorus and stuff or whatever was going on. And then Hank would say, I'm gonna go in the room here for a little while, and he'd disappear maybe for 2 hours. And then he would just come out and go, well, excuse me, thank you. Could I drink you a bite? Oh, now listen to me. I mean, he'd come out and lay that shit on you.
That's
and you'd
crazy.
Just go, wow. I mean, that's what he did. He would just go away, and then he'd come back, and he'd basically have the song finished. And you're just sitting out there twiddling your thumbs waiting on him. It's crazy.
Golly. I tell you what, you got to get Dean on this podcast.
I'd love to get Dean on that the podcast. Awesome. I haven't seen him in a long time.
Yeah.
I wrote with him one time, and he intimidated me so bad. I was just getting started, and I was scared to death of him. He was actually on Atlantic early on when I was on Atlantic.
That's right.
They kept putting that armadillo in his video and stuff. You remember that? Do you remember the armadillo thing? Because I don't know why they did that. It was really strange.
I don't remember that, but that's hilarious, man.
Oh, goodness, man. What else is going on with you, brother?
Let's see. At home, I got married about a year and a half ago.
Congratulations.
My wife, Shayla, she's awesome.
Y'all planning a family soon?
You know, we're so busy. I was telling you, you know, we're nose to the grindstone. We really haven't even talked about it. It's just so crazy right now. And, you know, I couldn't imagine being – of course, we would figure it out, you know, if we needed to. But I couldn't imagine being able to be any kind of parent at this
– it's hard,
you know,
man.
Without it really having a strong impact on what I'm – I think I would really have to slow down a lot, you know.
You're not at that place yet.
Not there. I just don't think the timing's right. Yeah. Of course, if God wants it to happen, he'll make it happen. Okay. We know that. But
for sure. Is everybody on one bus still?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all – I mean, my wife's right up there with all the dudes, you know, and we go to the venue, and we all – I'll stand by the, you know, it's like sports showers in these arenas is where we're showering. And so my wife goes in there, and I guard the door, and, you know, and the guys will walk up with their towels. I'm like, Shayla's in there showering, you know, or whatever, and she's adjusting to the road life.
Yeah.
I mean, her, it's, she does not come from this at all. She's not historically throughout her life involved in the music business, except back in Kentucky, her dad owned honky tonks. Gotcha. So there was music around, but this is just a total thrower. She just got thrown in the fire, and she's like, it's, I asked her the other day, I was like, what, like, we don't talk about it very much. And I was like, we don't talk about this, but like, is this still pretty crazy for you? You know, like, now we've been together 5 years. And she's like, I'm getting pretty used to it. I'm like, could you ever, like, imagine if you would have settled down with some guy back home, one of those farming guys, or somebody you went to UK with at college, one of those, they end up being a doctor, and he's home at 6 p.m. every single day. And she's like, well, that just sounds boring. I'm like, well, you got the, it comes with a lot of BS, but it's an exciting life, and we really enjoy it. And she's cut out great for it, you know? We live on the road, essentially. We're not even trying to buy a property in Nashville or anything. We're just literally living on the road, just living as simply as we possibly can. We got two little dogs that are 4 pounds, so we just, they're in a bag. They travel with us everywhere we go.
I love it.
But yeah, I'm in just in a really great spot, enjoying my life and enjoying the job I get to do. They say when you're living your dream and doing what you love, you never work a day. And so far, that's 100% true. Like, I feel guilty sometimes because I'm like, I know there's people out there doing.
I'm glad you brought that word up, because I struggled with guilt early on, man, because I came from, I mean, I didn't have nothing. I mean, I moved up here with nothing.
Yep.
Don't let that consume you, know, because, but it's a very real thing, because you start to feel guilty about being successful, and people prey on that if you let them.
Yeah.
You got to be real careful.
That's a great point. And I never thought too much about it. And I just said that with so casually, but yeah,
it's a natural thing. I mean, I know a lot of people. I've talked about it with a lot of my peers from the 90s, just about the guilt. I mean, I gave a bunch of cars away, just stupid stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just, but you just want to share it with the people that you care about. You really do.
That's exactly where it's from, because there's something about seeing people. I know people that make a ton of money. I mean, just have everything you could ever want, and they just, their life is, they hate their job so much. And I even feel guilty towards that, because I'm like, man, why did I deserve to get to do something that I enjoy and love so much? It almost makes me like talk about the not so great things about this to make it not seem so, you know, but it really, I mean,
it's,
I get discouraged,
life, man.
You know, but it is to do something you enjoy. And I don't think that's just necessarily specific to the music business, but if you dream about being a farmer, farming's tough, you know, to make
any some money. People, I got friends back home that's all they ever wanted to do. They went to ag school and learned about crop rotation and fertilizer and all those things that went into it. And they eat, breathe, and sleep it every day. And they struggle from the day they get up to the day they die.
And love every
and love
minute
every
of
minute.
It.
They do. You know, but you can't put a price on happiness, man. And finding something, and I've told my kids this as they've gotten older, find something that you're passionate about, you know.
Yep.
And because none of us are getting out of here alive. You know, you got one life. Enjoy every moment that you can.
Yep.
And you might have $1 million in the bank, but it ain't gonna make you happy.
Yep. And I think, luckily, I enjoy the balls to the wall. Since from the time I was a kid, I'm like, man, I want to. When I seen, you know, Montgomery Gentry, those guys did like 200 plus dates a year. They were, and Eddie was, he'd come home and he'd be all wired up and he'd be like, out there getting it, boys, just out there raising hell. We gonna show them who Montgomery Gentry is, you know. And he was always fired up. I'm like, I want to be that way. I want to go. I'm gonna show everybody who I am, my music, and what I stand for, and what I believe in. And of course, there are days where I'm like, I just want to go fishing. But it, you can't complain. You know, you can't complain too much because it's an awesome lifestyle.
So as your popularity's grown, I'm sure you've had an opportunity to meet some of your heroes. Who's some of the coolest celebrities? Many actors, athletes. Who's some of the coolest people you met so far?
Man, that's a great question. I haven't really met a ton of actors and stuff like that, and I've met mostly, ironically enough, country music artists that I've grown up listening to and was heavily influenced by. There was a random thing. My dad loved 80s classic rock, and so I was also raised on like Def Leppard, and Journey, and so I got this random offer. This was like 2015. It's like, hey, do you want to go open for REO Speedwagon?
Really?
Yeah, and I'm like, hell yeah. And which is so weird because I'm singing country ass music and then REO goes on after me, and it was totally weird and different. But I met Kevin and the rest of the band, and I actually kind of became friends with him a little bit. And I saw him in Boise, Idaho, and we just sat and talked for a while. And there's something that hit. What do the kids say these days? Something that hits different about that. Like if I meet it, like Bret Michaels met him. If I meet 80s classic rock people, I get what it feels like to be starstruck.
Yeah, I understand
a little bit. You know, absolutely. I'm like, it'll stop me in my tracks a little bit for some reason. It's just different than, but I've got to know some of my heroes. Man, when I was with doing a show the other day with the Front Men, which is Tim Rushlow and Larry and Richie, Lone Star, Little Texas, and Restless Heart.
Yep.
And I told those three guys, I said, if I had a quarter for every time I was in my F-150, 5-speed, switching gears, driving down a back road in Kentucky, listening to your guys' songs, just literally, I could have crashed into a tree drifting off dreaming of doing what you guys do. And that's your music as well. And it's crazy that we're sitting here because your music, above all else, was a huge influence to me. Man, I had your CDs. I had them in my truck. I mean, it was like, I loved what you did back then, man. Everything about it was just so awesome. And Pay Me a Birmingham, Time Marches On are some pivotal songs for me. Yeah. I mean, like up there. And I've told you this before, that made me want to be a songwriter. Pay Me a Birmingham, to me, in my book, and Time Marches On as well. That song maybe single-handedly made me want to be a songwriter.
Yeah.
Because of how well it was written, and I was like, "Wow, that's amazing!" The way that story is told.
Special songs, man.
Yep.
They don't fall. They don't come around every day. I mean, those. There's a lot of good songs in Nashville, and people have a lot of hits on good songs.
Yep.
But great songs don't come along very often.
Yep. No, they don't. And there's not very many of them flying around these days. But there's still a couple. Dirt Cheap. If you've heard Dirt Cheap, I consider that it's Cody Johnson's new record. I consider that one of those, but. But I remember kind of learning to sing to I See It Now.
Yeah.
The way you sang that song to me was like, man, if I could just learn to sing like Tracy sang that song on that record, I could probably get like a pretty hot girlfriend.
Oh, good. The waltzes were very good to me.
It's awesome, man.
Yeah, we had some great times. That was before cell phones, brother.
Yeah, it was. It was. And thank God. Yeah. Thank God I was not a kid or a teenager when Facebook and Instagram and phones. I enjoyed being a kid and a teenager. I didn't care what other people thought about me. I wasn't on that. Like, I feel like kids these days are always comparing themselves to everybody
else. It's not healthy.
It's not. And I didn't give a shit when I was growing up. I had a pickup truck. I had the crappiest Ford in the world, and I didn't know. I thought I had the best truck. I did. And I just rode around back roads and listened to music, and I wasn't always on my phone. I mean, it was – I would look – I would – you know, I'd I would soaked everything up. I would go fishing and I wasn't lost in a cell phone. I was enjoying just being alive, and I don't know if that's like that now, but I barely missed it just by a few years.
You know, music back then too. I feel like it was more special, and I spent so much time in my piece of crap car,
yeah,
going to a jamboree or to a crappy honky tonk to play. I mean, it was my whole world. The music was constant, and I was, yep, singing all the time.
Yep.
You know, it was just it was a different experience because we had to wait in anticipation for the new material coming from our favorite artists. And,
right.
You know, and I just don't think it. I'm hoping that some of that's coming back. But when you have access to the entire world in the palm of your, yep, hand, you don't wait for anything.
Yeah.
Kids, the instant gratification is just—it's right there all the time.
It's like a drug. It's like a dopamine dump, and when you use up all your dopamine, it's gone. I mean, it's like that. I feel like phones are just always doing that. It's just like robbing people. But that's—I could rant on that all day long.
A lot of, you know, but it's part of our culture, and
it's
dug in deep. And my kids are experiencing. I mean, when we had that little cell phone outage from AT&T shut down the other day, and my wife thought I was going to lose my mind. I kept picking it up.
You know, I know.
Because, I mean, I'm playing a YouTube something, or I'm, yeah, looking at my text or emails, or it's like, dang, man.
Everybody is susceptible to it, for, yeah, sure. But you're talking about honky-tonks, and I played a bunch of honky-tonks. I think that might be kind of going away a little bit for, like, the TikTok and stuff. Some of the artists are blowing up from these online things. And they've never played honky, that maybe, or ever a show in general. And I think it's interesting. I don't know if I learned something or have an advantage in any way, the fact that I played honky tonks growing up. I want to think that I learned something. I have more to offer because of it. But I did. I remember, and I was in Nashville. Working out during the week, working security, and I'd lost my publishing deal, so I wasn't writing songs. Nobody wanted to write with me because I didn't have a publishing deal anymore. I was literally working security, checking IDs Monday through Thursday, and then on Thursday I would drive up and play all weekend in Kentucky at bars around, yeah, there, and I had a band up there and everything. And I did that for 2 years, and I did not do any music business related activities for that whole 2 year period. I just worked my ass off morning to night at that honky tonk as a security guard. And I was like, why am I here? You know, I was sitting here going, I'm a security guy in Nashville. That's my identity. Why am I here? I can go back to Kentucky and play these bars and get a job up there and just keep doing this. Thank God I stuck around. But those honky tonks, man, that was a wild time. I remember pulling up. I had no money. They wasn't paying me nothing. I had a Jeep that I had somehow managed to get running. It wasn't even legal. I didn't even have plates on it because I couldn't get past the emissions test and couldn't afford to get it fixed to pass the emission. I was like, yeah, well, I got to get where I'm going. I'm just going to drive illegally. And I did for like 3 years. I drove that thing around.
You learn to watch your rear view mirror and turn. Each time a cop pulls up behind you, I'm going to turn in the parking lot somewhere.
Right.
I've experienced,
yeah,
it.
Yeah. And I pulled up to that honky tonk and somebody laughed their hind end off at me. I think it's funny now, but I was kind of pissed. But they were laughing at me because I carried a brick in my passenger seat because this old crappy Jeep, the parking pins had broken off. So if you put it in park, it didn't do anything. It just rolled. So when I parked my Jeep, I kid you not, everywhere I went, I would stop my Jeep where I wanted to park. I would grab this brick, keep my foot on the brake, and open the door, and as quickly as I could, let off the brake and jump out and throw this brick up under the tire. That's how freaking broke I was, man. And if anything, I got those stories out of it. But like all that, I thought I was like going to college for country music, playing those bars and being broke and all that. And I don't know if it ended up helping her. I definitely became a better guitar player and probably a better singer. I was smoking cigarettes. all day and all night, drinking whiskey, playing four-hour shows, just no breaks, and there was people fighting and glasses being broke and stuff being thrown at me and sleeping in my car because I didn't want to. I don't want to drink. I've never drank and drive. That's been my number one rule, but I would sleep in my car if I had too much drink and just like killing myself like in my early 20s. And I'm like, now people blow up on TikTok. They skip the whole thing.
and you know, there's something to be said about paying your dues in the honky-tonk, too, because you learn how to structure a show.
Yep.
You learn how to interact with the crowd. You learn what time of the night after, you know, if you're doing 4 or 5 hour sets, yep. you structure things in because your old job is to keep people on that dance floor.
That's
if you're
right.
not keeping them out there, they're not drinking.
That's
if
right.
they ain't drinking, the bar ain't hiring you back. Yeah. So, but there's a lot of lessons to be learned that are very important as you do get an opportunity to shine.
Yep.
And I think a lot of these kids, and I've had several young TikTok artists on here, and they're
and
getting
against that.
And you know, they're taking a different path, but I think their learning curve is a lot different, and some of them just aren't ready to go on the road yet.
Yeah.
You know, I felt the same thing about karaoke. You know, you're not going to learn how to navigate a full show by doing a song here and there.
Right.
You don't learn how to work a crowd or work a
right.
room. It's just difficult.
Yeah, that's right. That's a great point. And the other thing too is what I've learned is that no matter how big the crowd is, if you treat that place like a honky tonk, they're going to eat it up.
20 or 20,000.
Yeah.
Might be no difference.
They're going to eat it up
Absolutely.
If you do that. And I think what I mean by, obviously, there's some things. If you treated it like a honky-tonk, you wouldn't be utilizing the giant stage you're on. But if you go up, if you play, when you build your set list, if you build it around just a flow state, a certain flow state, like you would a honky-tonk, like you said, to keep their attention or to keep them on the dance floor, that's universal. That's going to work for 10,000 people, and it's going to work for 30 people.
Absolutely.
You know.
So tell me, so we've been talking about, you know, all the learning curves and what you come. Tell me the first time you heard your song on the radio. Were you in your car?
Yeah. I was on radio tour,
yeah.
and I was in Virginia, and the radio rep knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And so she already got her phone on record. And I'm not a super emotional like crier or whatever, you know, but I just turn blood red when I get excited or I'm overloaded with emotions, I turn into a red human being like a lobster. and she got that phone recording and that song came on and you can just see I go in shock and I'm like, I turn over like this. I'm like frozen and I look like a lobster. I'm just so full of emotion and excitement. I could have shot out of the roof of that car. I was so excited. I was like, my song's on the radio. And I was just, I mean, but inside I was like, man, there were so many emotions, but it's like, that's what I always wanted was to hear my song legitimately on the radio. Like
it sounds different on the radio.
It does.
Big time.
I love the way stuff sounds on the radio. I'm a huge advocate for country radio. Like I said, I grew up hearing my uncles on there. I still think country radio is a part of people's lifestyle.
Oh yeah.
Not lifestyle. It's a part of their lives, whether they want to admit it or not. It's part of driving your kids to school. It's part of driving down a back road. As long as there's cars and as long as there's a receiver or something, you're going to end up, it's going to end up. Another thing about radio that I love that you don't have now with streaming, and I love streaming, all the streaming folks out there, I love you, but radio forced you to become fans of music that you otherwise wouldn't have because you're waiting on your favorite song to come up. In the meantime, you're listening to some songs that you maybe aren't familiar with and
you
maybe don't like, but they'll grow on you while you're waiting for your favorite song to come on. And I discovered a lot of music that way. And now if you hear something you're not familiar with, you just hit next. That changes everything.
Yeah.
People don't realize how much that next button has like single-handedly altered the trajectory.
Well, I used to love to go buy an album. I mean, if I bought a new project and had a hit song on the radio, I wanted to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah.
I wanted to hear how the artist put that project together from top to bottom, and we've turned into such a single-driven format that I think we're missing a lot of really great music out there by some phenomenal artists. Because everything that you cut on a record is not designed to go to radio.
That's right.
It's just not. And if you tried to put an album full of those things on there, it would fall flat, I think. I mean, because people want those personality things that they find those hidden gems. Yep. At least that's what we used to do.
Yeah, I mean, and album cuts have always been my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they're the ones that really can change people's lives, you know, a song like that. But, yeah, man, we're just navigating it, all right? We're just adapting to it, and we'll all figure it out.
But how do you how much social media have you doing? How relevant is that to you and your career? I know it's a frustrating thing for me. How do you deal with all of it?
It frustrates me, and I don't like it a bit. But it's when I first moved to town, it wasn't quite as much of a thing. But luckily, I had a mentor in my life that prepared me for it. They were like, this is going to grow more and more important in your career, so get used to it. And so she sent me through all kinds of different social media training and all this stuff. Well, it didn't work. I still hate it. I still don't want to do it.
I don't mind doing things like this. That's why I started the podcast. But as far as, I mean, a lot of these new artists, they're posting 8, 9, 10 times a day.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I couldn't do it.
It's necessary. If you don't like doing it, you got to get you somebody that'll do it for you, right? Yep. And I'm sure you do have somebody. My case, just recently, because of my wife enjoys it. She loves social media. She's on it all the time. I don't know why, but she does. And so I had this idea. She had this idea, actually. She goes, why don't, you know, I'd been struggling finding somebody regularly to run my socials for me, because I will not do it. I mean, that's just where I'm at, guys. And I said, my wife loves it. She loves it. Why don't she run my socials? It makes perfect sense. She's with me all the time, and she gets all the content, and she's always got her phone recording me, and we're laughing and doing very natural things. Well, she started posting everything about, like, yesterday I was listening to some songs and just fishing and singing, and she's going to post that, and God knows what will happen. We've had all kinds of random stuff like that blow up. Just me doing my thing and my wife filming me, and it's a game changer.
It makes a difference.
And I don't even have to worry.
Don't have to do anything. Yeah. Just let her do her thing. Yeah. So you've got some UK stuff coming up later this year. Who are you going overseas with?
Yeah, I'm going out with John Party.
Okay.
So yep. And so he's going to take me overseas, which is...
Have you been out of the country yet?
Never been. No, I'm a little nervous, but I'm super, super excited. John is... That is so nice of him.
That market's becoming really huge and receptive to country music, man. It really is. You're going to have a good time. But the food, the culinary is a little bit different experience.
It is.
Yeah. There's, you know, I don't know where all y'all are going, UK, but as you get up into Germany and Bavaria, schnitzel's a big thing.
Really?
I love Italy. You know, we've been to Australia. Australia's got a huge country market over there.
Really? Yeah, I've heard that.
Flights are long, brother.
Yeah.
Sitting business class, all I can tell you. Don't buy coach seat. Spend the money. You'll be glad you did.
Gosh, I don't know if my back can handle that.
I'm telling you, spend the money to go up to business class. They got these little pods where you can lay down, you can sleep.
Really?
Yeah. Spend the money on it. It's worth it. It's worth it. Don't stick yourself back there in coach if you don't have to.
I think we've already booked flights. I don't know.
Upgrade. Trust me.
We're doing UK, Northern Ireland.
That's cool.
And then Scotland.
Yeah.
Germany, Amsterdam, Sweden, Norway. And I'm missing something.
The freaking beer in Germany, dude.
I can't wait.
Because they don't pasteurize everything. It's not all mass-produced like it is over here. So every area has its own beer.
Yeah.
The real Hefeweizen over there
is
like drinking a loaf of bread.
No
There's
kidding.
Stuff floating all in it. And every place you go, it's going to be a little bit different.
Really?
But it's just so full-bodied and rich. Not bitter. I mean, the beer's amazing.
I can't wait. In Ireland, too, I hear all the pubs. And I can't wait for that because My dad's real big into genealogy, you know, family tree stuff, and I have an interest in it. I haven't had time to dig in, but we're Irish and Scottish or Scotch Irish,
so
I'm I wish I had time to go see. Apparently, he's tracked down some of our ancestors' graves and stuff, and I would love to have time to go see all that. But I think it's going to be cool to get back to the real roots in Ireland. You know, that's cool.
I want to go sometime. Yeah. I'm Irish descent, too, but I haven't been over there yet. Yeah. It's on the bucket list.
Yeah, there you go, buddy.
So what do you see for the next 5 years of your career? You got a goal in mind? You're just going to grind it out? You got any plans? I mean, is there a step list that you're looking at that you're thinking about?
Yeah, I want to have my own like real tour, and I'm not talking about, oh well, let's just get a run of dates and we'll slap the word tour on it and then we'll act like it's a tour for so we can flex for everybody. Oh
yeah,
I'm talking about a real legitimate tour, a headlining tour. And I'm a road dog. I want to play all the dates. I want to be gone on the road all the time. If I had my choice, I would never be in town. So that's one of my goals, and whatever that looks like, whether that be 1,000-seater venues or 10,000, whatever, I'd love to reach that goal. We talked about radio a bunch on here. I'd love to have a number one this year,
yeah.
And then be working on my second number one, you know, by the end of the year, and have that figured out what we're going to release and have it all primed up and ready to go. If it's gonna work its way up that direction up the chart, it'll be right in the summer, fall is when it'll be old enough out there. It's either gonna be where it's at in the 30s and fall off, or it'll push through. We'll see. So that's a goal. And continue to build my team, you know, my everything from the crew and the band on the road to Nashville, what we're doing in Nashville, the label and management and everything that's going on. And maybe my wife gets into starting her own social media company and she's building her team and working with other artists and just getting that team and not just anybody, but finding the right people.
Yeah.
'Cause that's hard. That's hard to do, find the right people. So those are just a few, but what you got going on? What goals you got this year and stuff?
I'm out with Riley Green right now.
Oh, cool! We're
killing it out there. We just had our first weekend on the road. And shoot, man, I'm writing a bunch right now. Got a lot of people on my schedule, and I'm going to be going in the studio, looking at probably the first part of May to finish up. I cut an EP last year. I got six songs in the can. We just dropped our first single last week. But I'm just working, man. Right. Just doing my thing, doing my podcast, doing my radio show.
And awesome.
Getting to visit with interested cats like you and kind of see what's going on in the new world of country music, man. I love this because I'm getting to develop relationships with people that, you know, we'd see each other in passing, and we've had a good friendship over the years. But to sit down and really take the time to talk to somebody and get to know them, I find that very fascinating. I'm enjoying it a lot.
This is awesome, and I haven't done many of these. I did. Justin Moore has one. Yeah. I did a couple, 2 or 3 years ago, but I've had a few opportunities to do it, and I chose to, for whatever reason, it was just a gut feeling. I'm like, I want to make sure that it's one that I really care about, you know, if I'm going to do it. I don't want to just go do every podcast that comes, because like writing songs or recording songs, even I want to do something that means something that I'm excited about and that is important to me. So same for podcasts. This was when this came up, super important to me. I'm like, it's a no-brainer, you know. But this is awesome. I mean,
well, you know, I watch a lot of podcasts and just to kind of stay in touch with what's out there, and you know, some of them are a little bit hard hitting. Some of them go a little bit too political, and I'm more interested in the music and what inspires people and what motivates you to do what you do and where you came from, and you know, just the story, you know, and it's and I find it very fascinating. No matter how different we all are, we have common ground because we're passionate about what we do.
Yeah,
and I respect that a lot.
Right,
you know, and whether you're an actor, if you're passionate about your craft, and you're a decent human being, because there's a balance there too.
There is, yeah.
And not getting carried away with it and letting it all go to your head, man. There's right. there's a cool balance that you got to hold on to.
Do you ever do other podcasts outside of this?
I do. We've tried to spread out and do a few more. I've done a handful of them. But there, it's just between this and all the stuff, I don't have a lot of time.
Yeah.
You know, I take a couple of days a week to do stuff at home. You know, I still have honeydews. I have a wife. I have to go out and work in the yard and take the trash to the dump and deal with the dogs and go to the vet and all that stuff too. You just like everybody else does.
Yep. That's right. Yeah. That's awesome. And the reason I ask that is because, we've talked about me a lot,
but this is about you.
I'm not good at that. I'm just. But,
it's been interesting,
but it's. Gosh, I was trying to think before I came in here, like just stories, because being around Dean this weekend, he's got the most incredible stories, and I was like, I don't tell stories as much as I probably should. You know, I feel like sometimes people want to hear those stories, and they influence songs, you know, great songs. So I've been really just lately trying to rack my brain and trying to, like the brick and the Jeep story. Like those little things, just trying to dig in there and find all the
Is there a song in there somewhere? Yeah, the brick and the Jeep. There's a song in there somewhere, brother. don't let it slip away.
I think it would have to do with being broke, you know, or something. But that Jeep, man, I have a 2018. I broke down and got me a new truck a couple years ago. And a few years ago in 2018 GMC, and I'm still locked up in that buying crappy vehicles thing. Like, I'm not used to having a new truck, but that thing has never broke down on me, you know, being a new truck. I'm like, wow, this is awesome. I'm so used to my vehicle breaking down like once a week and having to get up under there and figure out how to fix it and replace the water pump and stuff. And now all that.
Oh, you have a bus. I'm sure you're breaking down.
That's
a never ending journey.
That is a great point. I don't know why these things break down as much as they do
all the freaking time. Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny. I think the last couple of times one of my buses has broken down on the side of the road, Gary Allen's people have been coming by, and they're always gracious to stop and haul people on into town. And they broke down recently. Didn't we have to stop and pick some of their guys up recently? You were probably passed out. You don't know.
So what happens? The bus, you back up and hook up to their bus and pull their bus?
No, but you have to call a tow truck. I mean, we've been broke down on the side of the road waiting on a tow truck. I mean, like at Dixon.
Right.
And so they just bring everybody on to town and drop people off wherever.
But you know,
we're all out here together. Some people stop, some people won't. Yeah. It just depends on how well you know them, I guess.
Yeah, man, there's no doubt it's – it's a thing, and I saw a guy, he's a new artist, he was posting his first, like, weekend out as on the road, and he was like, man, the van broke down, and he was, the whole thing, and he was like, we popped a tire, and we got there, and there was no one there to let us in the building, and we're sitting out here in the city, and like with all of our guitars and stuff spread out, and we were like worried somebody was going to come up and steal our guitars. And I'm like, that's the road. Like, that's just a normal weekend, right?
Oh, yeah. We got so much crap. We're always popping a tire on a trailer.
Oh, gosh.
It's constant.
It makes me nervous just talking about it. I'm over here knocking on wood just this whole conversation.
So you met these boys back here. Junior plays guitar in the band. He plays
that
guitar. And Scott's the piano player. So
that's
audio
right.
and video back there. So give me some good questions. Scott works on a question. He's got something really good worked up. I just feel it today. I just feel it.
I'd heard that you have an e-bike.
Right? Wow. I do.
Yeah,
I do.
Have you ever had a close call on that thing? Was that hard to learn how to use it?
Not
what do you
on
use it
that
for?
E-bike, but I've done the electric scooters, like the
birds.
Yeah, I like that stuff. I love when I get to a town, if I have time, I like riding around. And I don't know. I always loved motorcycles. I won't get one because they're dangerous. And my wife won't let me probably, but I've always enjoyed that. But I was on a bird scooter one time, and I had a real situation where it shook me, and I didn't get back on one for a long time. A bus in a city just like almost pushed me into another car because I was trying to not get run over by him. And he was like just totally ignoring me, acting like he wasn't driving a giant bus. And I was on this little scooter. He just basically didn't care. And I was like, man, it can happen so quick. So the e-bike, the story behind that is it's called Baku. And it's a hunting bike. It's for hunting. So I don't have like a four-wheeler or anything like that. Basically, it comes with a deer trailer or a game trailer is what they call it. You hook the trailer up, you ride the bike up into the woods. It's got a gun mount, you know, rack and a bow rack. And you put your bow on, get in your camo, pull this trailer up to your hunting spot. And if you harvest an animal, you take that bike, pull it up to it, throw it on there, and it'll pull like 1,500 pounds.
Wow, easy. That's awesome.
And it's got a battery, so you just charge it up, and you can pull your game out of the woods. And then, of course, you know, for fun, I'll throw it in the trailer and take it out and ride down the beach or go find a park somewhere and ride around. And
next time we run into each other on the road, I'm carrying. Oh, I got carrying three of them out with us.
Oh, nice! Yeah, we'll have to go out and
especially some of these places you go, they got all kinds of trails and
oh yeah, it's awesome.
I love it.
Yep. It's one of my favorite things to do. But if I ride with you, we got to get some vests and start like an e-bike gang.
Okay, I'm all about that.
So you mentioned those bird scooters. So bass player and myself, dude, we spent at least $1,000 renting these things.
Oh.
You know, it's like 40, 50 bucks at a time. But we've done it so much, it's like, man, we ought to just buy one of these things. But when you hop on one of those bird scooters, I always have a theme song going on in my head, something like Lowrider or Money for Nothing. What would be your theme song when you crank
that's
that bird
good,
up?
Man.
Gosh, man. You named a couple good ones there. What would mine be?
Something with a groove.
Now, you caught me off guard on that one. I'm trying to think what would my song be.
Like
probably
Free Bird or something.
There you go. Play that funky music.
There you go.
Play that funky music.
That don't make sense. I don't know why that's what popped up.
So if you were a wrestler, that would be your walk-in music? What would your walk-in music be, Junior?
That's a good question.
What would your walk-in music be?
I love Lowrider for some reason. I just love that.
I'm really curious about what Scott's walk-in music would be. If you were a professional wrestler, what would your walk-in music be?
Well, probably.
Super Freak. Sure. No, you got to come up with
Eye of the Tiger. How about
okay.
That's a good
there
one.
There you go.
Wow, yeah. That is a good one.
That's some Donald Trump stuff.
I'd probably go some Clyde Waylon Jennings. Clyde.
What's that, buddy?
Clyde by Waylon Jennings. That'd probably be my
favorite. Yeah, there you go.
Vanessa and Grease. That's awesome, man. Well, brother, I sure have enjoyed visiting
it's
with you. I know
awesome,
you got a busy
man.
Week
Thank
going
you.
On at CRS.
Yeah, are you
going
to be down there at all?
I am not. We have a couple more podcasts tomorrow, and then I'm leaving tomorrow evening and heading back out with Riley. So we got
nice,
a full weekend.
Well, tell Riley hello. I
sure
saw
will.
Him a few days ago. But
he's such a good dude.
He
man.
Is. He's
he really
awesome,
is.
Man.
He's puts on a great show. He's been killing it, man.
Yeah.
Big crowds, too. It's been awesome to see.
He's crushing it. He took me on a. Took me on the road with him one time, and I was just opening for him acoustic, and he was real good to me, and he took me on a couple hunting trips with him, and I was like, man, you can't be that good looking and be that good of a guy at the same time. It just
yeah, you're not supposed to get all the good things. Come on, you gotta have some bad trait in there somewhere. He eats healthy, looks good, works out. You know,
yeah. It is great. Music's great too. But yeah, man, thanks for having me. This has been
always
awesome.
A pleasure, brother.
Yeah, let's do it again.
Much continued success. Just
thanks,
stay safe
Tracy.
Out there, my friend. Dylan Carmichael,
we'll do it,
everybody.
Brother. Thank you.
Yes.